This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and we're from Joy Breakfast.
We hope you enjoy this Joy podcast.
You're on Joy Breakfast, and we're getting into a bit of a heavy conversation this morning after what we've seen in the news. How can we not? So before I dive into it, I just want to preface that if any part of this conversation causes you stress or anxiety in any way, shape, or form, you can head to joy.org.au/support to access a range of support services where you can get help, seek guidance in whatever shape or form that may be for you. And if you're not in the mood to hear some stuff right now in the morning, just come back in 10 minutes' time. The tunes will keep on coming. So in the past week, the Australian news cycle has been, look, unrelenting with stories of tragedy and violence. We've been seeing it all. Rach and I have struggled to figure out how we talk about this or whether we talk about this with you all on air, because we know that we're seeing it everywhere in this 24-hour news cycle. So we decided to get someone in to help us break this down. And today we're joined by Associate Professor of Psychology, Dr. Katie Wood, to talk about how parents can best talk with their kids about these heavy world events. Katie, thank you for coming on Joy Brekkie this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dean.
Now, if parents hear about heavy news stories before their kids do at school or on social media, how can they best bring up these topics with them?
I think it's a really good question, and it's really important for parents to feel comfortable to bring up topics, particularly if their children are showing signs that they want to talk about these particularly very traumatic incidents that they may well hear about in the, you know, when they're at school or among their friends. I think parents and carers have a responsibility to really take the lead in those discussions and to create safety and a space for children to be able to ask questions in a way where parents can sort of use language that is suitable for children to understand and that's sort of pitched at their age and developmental stage.
With these big things that are happening, though, big adult things that we can kind of barely process ourselves, that's not an easy thing to do, is it?
No, it's really not an easy thing to do, and parents will often, perhaps the natural tendency is to want to avoid discussing, you know, tough topics, because we partly as adults want to avoid, you know, having to think about them as well, because they bring up all sorts of emotions that we perhaps haven't really dealt with ourselves. How safe is the world? Are we safe when we go out? How do we navigate grief, loss? How do we talk about death? So all those things are really hard for adults to think about, but kids will think about those things, and if adults take the lead in helping them to process those big conversations, those big feelings, then they will feel more comfortable and able to navigate through them themselves, and particularly preparing children to be adults as well.
That navigation is so important. What about if children witness a traumatic event? And we're not just saying like the ones that have happened recently in Sydney, seeing it in person, but also on social media. We have this 24-hour news cycle now, which means access to things that kids shouldn't necessarily be seeing or hearing exists in a bigger way. What do you think parents should prioritize when they're having a conversation with their kids about this kind of thing?
Well, if kids have witnessed what we call what happened on the weekend in Sydney, we call that a single incident traumatic event. So it's an acute event that wouldn't be happening every day, thank goodness. And if kids have witnessed that either directly or indirectly via the news, the first thing that we need to do is what is called sort of psychological first aid, or provide psychological safety. And that really is ensuring that kids have their basic needs met. So they've got a safe place to go, they're connected to family, friends, community, and as much as possible, parents are providing, as I was saying before, a safe space to answer any questions that might come up. But then what we want to do in the 2 weeks following an event like that is just really be monitoring for any signs of psychological distress or if kids are showing signs where they're sort of not looking like they're functioning very well. We don't want to run in or race to providing sort of more formal intervention straight away, because we really want kids to rely on their natural resilience, or what we call bounce back, before we bring in any more sort of formal support. So in the immediate aftermath, we're really relying on parents to provide that safe space to have those conversations in language that the children can understand. And then as much as possible, ensuring that the everyday routines are maintained.
So every child is different. Every family is different. So what you're looking for can be different across the board, depending on how your child accesses or processes things. But what are some key things that they should maybe just look out for that might just let them know that something might not be right?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And you're right that every child is different and every family is different. So the things that might be signs that things are not, that the situation, that the child's sort of having some difficulty, might be poor sleep. So the onset of sort of sleep disturbance. We might also see signs of clinginess, where the child doesn't want to leave the parent, mm-hmm. doesn't want to transition into school or kinder or daycare, when they're not wanting to go out. So when they're avoiding places that they would ordinarily be very happy to go to.
Yeah.
So they might be some of the key signs that parents or carers should be on the lookout for. And in the after 2 weeks, if those things are persisting, and it's not sort of in the immediate aftermath, but in the 2 weeks following, then that might be when we bring in more professional help.
Why is that the 2 weeks? Is there something specific about that time frame?
Well, we sort of like, as I was saying, we sort of like 2 weeks to sort of let hope that most children will show natural sort of resilience and capacity to what we call that bounce back. So you want to give time and space for natural recovery to occur. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that means just providing that safety, providing opportunity to have a conversation, adults taking the lead with that, the check-ins, the monitoring. Schools do an amazing job at supporting young people in the aftermath of a traumatic incident. And so really linking in children to their already supportive community if they have one.
Dr. Katie Wood, don't go anywhere. We're going to continue this really important conversation. You're on Joy Breakfast.
The perfect mix of music, news, and interviews. Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy Breakfast, and I'm speaking with Dr. Katie Wood, an associate professor of psychology, about how parents can speak to their kids when really heavy world events take hold. Dr. Wood, do you think there's a concern that some kids may be desensitized to some of the events like the ones that we've been seeing because of how they're seeing it on social media, in the media? Do you think that's something parents should be concerned about?
I think it's definitely something to be concerned about, and I think it raises the question of how what children are being exposed to on the internet. Mm. And I would then come back to recommending very strongly that parents, as hard as it is in the busyness of everyday life, but that parents really have oversight and monitoring supervision of what their young ones are having access to on the internet. Yeah. And feel like they can take charge of that, because it's really important to be taking charge of that.
I mean, there's parental controls that exist that you can use to access and stop certain things, sites and things from your kids seeing. But there's also, I mean, what we've been talking about is really how you're talking about things with kids, how you're framing and phrasing things with them. And you can create that sense of understanding as well with the kids in your family or young people that are around you, to be able to give them a better understanding of when to put the phone down. Screen time is not the main thing, and it can create quite a bit of a difference. But do you think that there are any phrases or words that we should be using or not using when we're engaging in heavy conversations like this with young people?
I think the first thing to do is, I always come back to encouraging parents to be curious about what might be going on in the mind of the child. So, you know, just asking them, you know, like, what are you thinking right now? what's coming up for you when they, you know, when that conversation is happening. So that curiosity is really important, because it's sometimes we make assumptions about what a child might or might not be thinking or feeling, but just really checking in, noticing what you, you know, so you seem to be really sad, or you seem to be quiet today, is something on your mind? So just gentle, curious questions. The other thing I think around, if they're suddenly sort of showing some, I guess, physical, you know, like they've got a stomach ache or a headache and they don't want to go to school, sometimes that's them trying to communicate that they're not feeling, you know, there's something going on in their mind emotionally.
Anxiety.
Yeah. So maybe you're feeling anxious about going to school because of what you saw on the weekend or what you've been hearing about. So making those links for them, because children may not be able to make the link between having the stomach ache and feeling anxious about what they saw on the weekend. So the adult's role then is to make, join those dots, if you like.
Yeah.
As well as, I guess, yeah, giving them language for their emotions. So some children may not be able to actually label an emotion. So you seem to be feeling really sad, or I can see it in your eyes, or you seem really cross today. Is there something that's happened?
Yeah.
And then, so really trying to give them language for their emotions, because depending on their age and their developmental stage, they may not have that emotional vocabulary. For very young, for younger children, play is a really good vehicle to help express their emotions. So just sitting down with the child and giving them an opportunity to play with you, alongside you, and that might bring up things. So I always talk to parents about the idea of just building moments with children. So you don't have to spend hours, but just moments of time that create a connection where the child feels safe to then start to speak.
The reality is, when we're talking about kids, we're talking about young people, there's a lot of different ages in regards to that. So the rapport and relationship you have with them is going to play a really big part here. But we've also got to remember that we're going through, you know, trying to process this in a massive way as well at the same time. And with, when we're seeing these heavy, really upsetting things in our news cycles, that can be a difficult thing to do. So creating that space for ourselves as adults is also important in a really big way. One final question. I think a lot of people break it down in a really simple way when they're explaining something to young people, saying a bad person did a bad thing, because they don't want to kind of obviously get into the minutiae of the conversation with young people, because they don't want to cause further distress, but they're just trying to create a simple enough explanation. Do you think that's an all right way to go, or it's better to kind of just, depending on the relationship you have or the vocabulary the child has, to be able to explain things in a broader way for them?
Yeah, I think it's a really important point. And obviously children will understand things differently depending on their age. So keeping it simple when they're young is really important. And then as they get older, it's a bit like a child's understanding of death changes over the course of their life.
So
keeping it simple when they're little. And then as they get older, they may have more they're likely to have more sophisticated questions about why would somebody do something like that? Why, you know, and so then it might then lean to a conversation or lean towards a conversation about, you know, mental health. But not all people with mental health difficulties or challenges commit crimes of that nature.
No.
So not all people with mental health issues are violent. So it's really important to help young people understand that as well. And then, of course, how to instill safety when sometimes the world is not safe, but most of the time it is. So we don't want to be alarmist either, such that young, you know, our younger generation and ourselves as well don't want to go out in the world. But I think bringing back to your point before around adults, when we're navigating through this with children, it is really important as well for adults to take time out for themselves and to exercise self-care so that they're in the best position to then be supporting the children in their, or the young people in their world.
It's important for everyone to remember that this is, you know, not the norm. So navigating mm-hmm. this in a way that's going to work in the best way possible for yourself and your family is the name of the game. And you've given us some really great tips and advice in regards to that. I think the 2 weeks are the main thing we want a lot of people to remember with young people, just some things to look out for and engage with. But also there is help out there should you need it and advice should you need it to be able to reach for properly. And by the way, anyone, if any of this has distressed you in any way, shape or form, or you've got further questions, head to joy.org.au/support. We have a range of support services there that can help you depending on the needs that you have. I want to thank you for joining us this morning, Dr. Katie Wood, because this is a really important chat that we don't get to have enough. And it's really important we help everyone process and understand the difficult things we're seeing in the best way we can.
Thank you. Thanks, Dean, for having me.
You're on Joy Breakfast.
Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and I hope you enjoyed this little snippet of the fun we bring to air as a part of Joy Breakfast during weekdays.
Don't forget to tune in from 7 till 9 a.m. or like and subscribe to the Joy Podcast.
And keep yourself out loud and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.